I can hear the terror in his voice. He's seen them too. I'm up here, I call back. On top of the cliff. I don't know all those words in his language yet, but he can follow the sound of my voice. I'm not getting out from under the bushes until I know it's safe. I pick thorns from my palms and watch the fleet of Skyclaw in the muddy-looking sky. I've only been here a month, of course, so maybe this is normal, but it seems frightening to me. What could cause so many of the big predators to up and leave their hunting grounds? Of course, the moment the thought crosses my mind, the earth begins to shake. I bite back the scream building in my throat. Not again. I close my eyes and hug my knees to my chest, waiting for the earth to stop trembling. Each earthquake is terrifying to me. I can't ignore them like the others do, though I try hard to pretend I'm not freaking out every time one happens. They happen more often than we eat, and yet I can't sit back and pretend they're not happening, that the earth isn't shaking, that we're not perched atop the remains of an active volcano, and that's why we're living in a steamy island paradise in the middle of iceberg country. Each earthquake never lasts long, though. I always brace myself waiting for this to be the one, but it never is. The world trembles for a moment or two and then goes still. Until today. It shivers and I count off the seconds. 1, 2, 5, 10, 11 before it stops. Then it starts again, almost immediately. This one lasts for 5 seconds. A third tremor falls right behind, and then the world goes still once more. It's so quiet I can hear my heart thudding painfully loud in my chest. That's too many earthquakes in too short a period. Something's wrong.
Loren!
Cathar calls, and I scramble out from under the bushes and fling myself into his arms. I hug his neck tightly, and when I can finally choke down a breath, I point up at the sky where the Skyclaw are all retreating. Look! He nods, a grim look on his face.
They go.
My alien sounds far too calm, and I shake my head at him. You don't get it. They're fleeing. They're all fleeing this place. We need to go too. As if to punctuate my words, the earth shakes again in another quick tremor. At that, Cathar gives me a grim look and nods.
We go.
Thank God. Finally, we're getting out of this place.
19. Cathar. I do not waste breath asking my mate if she can climb down from the cliffs. There is no time. The ground beneath our feet shudders and shakes, and overhead the Skyclaw head away from the jungle in great numbers. They know something we do not. And like my Loren has been trying to warn us, the great smoking mountain is not dead. I think of the time, seasons ago, the way the world burned and the skies filled with smoke and the air clogged with ash. I remember it was so thick that we spit and wept gray for several turns of the moons, and it covered us like a second skin. I remember my camouflage was the color of ash for so long that when I turned blue once more, it surprised me. I remember the trees withering and dying, and a season of starvation. But mostly, I remember the deaths. So many died. My parents. My father's brother and his kits. Our clan went from 7 hands of people to just one in a mere heartbeat. The same with Shadowed Cat and Tallhorn. I remember the clan of the Long Tail, who chose not to send anyone on the Hunter's Challenge that day. None survived. We must leave here before that happens again. I fling my Loren over my shoulder and climb down the side of the cliff with all the speed I have in my arms. For once she makes no protest and does not demand to go on her own. I make it down and then we race forward, meeting the others on the beach.
We should not wait any longer,
Arjal tells me, rushing to meet me. He holds a pack in his hands and waves Matak forward. I see the Shadowed Cat clan dragging the rafts toward the water, and Jashel races past, bundles of supplies in his arms. Somewhere in one of the huts, Zuren wails, upset. It is all chaos. I nod to Arjal, who seems to be the only calm one other than myself. I will help those unable to get to the rafts on their own. Make sure the supplies are evenly distributed between all three tribes. He looks as if he will protest my order. Arjal does not like to take direction from me, but bites back his protest and nods. My mate slides out of my arms.
Zuren,
she tells me.
Baby needs us.
I nod at her. You retrieve Zuren, my mate. I will get to Chai.
Yes, to Chai,
she tells me, then grabs my hand and kisses my knuckles. She gives me a nod and a smile, then dashes toward the hut that Nadek and Zuren have temporarily made their own. Even in this madness, she thinks of me. It warms my heart and my Kui sings a gentle song of happiness. There will be more time for that later, though. For now, we must all escape. I move to the hut and see Marisol there. She jumps to her feet, her cheeks wet with tears, and babbles something in her strange language. Unlike my mate, she has made no attempt to learn our words. I cannot judge her, though. She has tirelessly waited on T'Chai both day and night. She will have time to speak our words when he is better. Come, I tell her, moving to T'Chai's side. We will go now.
Wait, can't move him.
She grabs my arm.
He's wounded.
We must go, I tell her again calmly, and pull her hand from my forearm. Before the great smoking mountain dies once more. I move to T'Chai's side and kneel next to him. The male's abdomen is bloated and looks discolored underneath the crisscross of angry wounds. His face is pale but covered in sweat, and his camouflage seems to have bled out of him entirely. He is not long for this world, and I hesitate at moving him. Then again, none of us are long for this world if we stay. I ignore Marcel and her unhappy protests as I gently take him in my arms and carry him out to the rafts. She stops screaming at me when she sees the others, and races to his side, clasping his hand even as I haul him toward the nearest raft. Perhaps she has realized what is happening. Arjal meets me at the edge of the rafts.
Strongarm will take the lead raft, he tells me, since this is your journey.
His smile is thin.
And you have more arms than us to paddle with.
Does he think we will lead them to their death? My Loren knows the way, I reassure him, and set T'Chai down gently on the second raft in the small group of three. Nearby, Sabren tests the ropes, and Atam lashes the supply packs down so they will not fall overboard. I hear an angry squawk, and when I turn I see my mate with Fat One perched on one shoulder, Zuren in her arms. She keeps a protective hand over the kit's head and scans the skies, as if she is afraid something will harm him from above. Behind her, Nadek limps out, leaning heavily on Ojek, Elf-Shadowed Cat. If it were any other day, there would be much teasing of the three rival clans working together. But today, no one is laughing. Marisol points to the sky behind us and says something. My mate gasps. I turn and look. On the far end of the island, where the smoke pours endlessly into the sea, black clouds of ash boil and billow into the skies as if someone has lit a great fire. I remember this. It is dangerous. Lives will be lost if we stay. It is decided, then. We go, I tell the group sharply, pointing Marcel to the raft with her mate, and then gently easing my mate toward the first one. Let us waste no more time here. We paddle out, silent. For once there is no bickering amongst our clans. Everyone is silent and gets to work. Since we are at the front of the raft chain, we have the toughest work ahead of us. Our paddles dig into the water, and we head away from the shore as quickly as we can. Even the Dech, who has not put effort into anything since his injury, paddles with grim determination. My mate holds Zuren in her arms and shushes him when he cries, causing Fat One to squawk angrily. I did not realize the flyer was coming with us, but when the animal settles on my shoulder with a flap of his wings, I cannot resist giving him an affectionate scratch. I am glad for his presence. It will remind me of home, even as we leave it behind. The current fights against us for a time, but once we get farther out it eases a bit, and then we are carried along as if on a breeze. We rest for a moment, and I scan the water. Never have I been this far out. The things that dwell in the water are fierce and hungry, but today they seem silent. Perhaps we are lucky. Or perhaps they do not know what to make of our large wooden crafts. Either way, I will gladly take whatever luck we get. Time passes. No one speaks. The kit falls asleep in Loren's lap, and she shades his face with a leather blanket. The air grows cooler as we get farther and farther out into the water. Look, Jachelle says after a time. His voice is low, frightened.
Behind us.
I turn, my paddle resting on my thigh, and glance behind us. I immediately scan the rafts of the others, but nothing seems amiss. Then I see it. Massive clouds of smoke, twice the size they were before, billowing out from the island. Not just in one spot, either. The gray of it stretches in a long line, and I realize that our trees are burning. Our home. It is being destroyed. The trees we carved into our new clan home will be gone, along with the Kari and all the night flyers that live in their branches. The huts of our ancestors that make up the Tallhorn home will be gone next. The shadowed cat caves will be likely destroyed as well. Nothing will be left. There is nowhere to go but forward. Grimly, I turn ahead once more and dig my paddle into the waters. My mate and my kit need safety. If that means the cold place on the far end of the water, that is where we will go.
20. Loren. It's near dawn when I wake up to Zaren nuzzling at my top, trying to feed. Whoa, little buddy, I tell him in a gentle voice as I detangle my limbs from a sleeping Cathars. Sometime in the middle of the night, he migrated over to my side of the raft and held me away from the edge. I've ended up in the middle of the thing with the baby, and Kiki perches on a basket nearby, ruffling his wings and looking indignant at his surroundings. I sit up and adjust the baby, handing him a chunk of an edible root for him to gnaw on. We should have prepared better for travel, I think. There are eggs, and dried fish, of course. But I feel reluctant to break out an egg when our journey's just beginning. What if this takes longer than we thought? It's already been a day. I glance up at the skies. It's dawn, or that dreamy, pale color just before the two tiny suns rise. The sky itself is an angry, cloudy gray, and the temperature has dropped overnight. It's getting colder the farther we get from the island. I glance behind us to see how far we've come, but I can't see it. Sometime while I was sleeping, the island went out of view entirely. I turn to look at the distant mountains that we're heading toward. I can't tell if they're any closer, and that's worrying. Is the current taking us away? Or is it going sideways when we should be going straight forward? I don't know if we can paddle such a long distance against the current if that's the case. I just hope something looks encouraging soon. I worry I've led the others into a trap. Surely, surely it can't be that hard to lead people to the other side of the water when we can see the purple peaks in the distance. I have to believe this will turn out well. Have to. Zaren throws the bit of root down and makes a fussy cry. I know how he feels. I want to get up and stretch my legs, but we're all piled onto this raft on top of one another, and it makes everything tricky. You lose your modesty fast, but you also lose your temper fast. I make a clucking sound at him and pull him closer, even as his little fists grab at my hair. I wince. Four fists means lots of hair pulling. Now, Zaren. An earth-shattering boom fills the skies. I fling myself on top of the baby in terror, and a moment later I feel Cathar's big form covering mine. The raft wobbles as everyone scrambles awake. I realize a moment later that I'm screaming. My mouth is open, but I can't hear anything. My ears ring and I realize that I can't hear Cathar or the baby crying underneath me. I can't hear the waves. There's no sound at all but silence and the endless droning sound in my ears. The volcano. It's exploded. Cathar touches me, and as I look over at him, I see he's camouflaged to match the raft. I watch his mouth moving, but I can't hear him either. I've heard of people going deaf from a gun that discharges too close to the ear, and I hope to God this doesn't last forever. I'm okay, I tell him, or at least I hope I do. I can't hear myself talk. I sit upright trying to comfort Zaren. The baby's fussing, his face screwed up with anger, but there's no sound. I watch Cathar as he touches each member of his small tribe, making sure they're all right. Kaki flings himself onto Cathar's shoulder, and my mate, my sweet, wonderful mate, grabs the terrified bird and clutches it tight against his chest, stroking the wings to calm it. I feel a jealous stab at him holding the bird, because I want to be held like that, too. But I've got the baby in my arms, and he's busy checking on the others. I glance down the raft line, and the other tribes seem to be awake, everyone rubbing their ears and looking confused. Someone points behind us, and I see that there's nothing but a black curtain of ash behind us, where the island used to be. Thank God we got away. A hand lands on the back of my neck, caressing it, and I glance over at Cathar, grateful for that small touch. Even though I can't hear my cootie, I can feel it thrumming in my chest. I'm so glad he's here. I'm so glad he's mine. I smile over at him, feeling weak and shaky. We're safe for now. We've got this, as long as we're together. I look over where Marisol is, and she's got T'Chai's hand in hers, the big warrior still lying flat in the center of the raft. It's while I'm looking over at them that I see the surge of water heading our way. Oh. Oh, fuck. Someone else notices on the third raft and gestures wildly. I barely have time to grab onto the vine ropes and anchor myself and the baby in my arms before I feel Cathar's big body shield me again. I squeeze my eyes shut, holding my breath and bracing for the worst. The raft surges, and I can feel all of us lift up like an elevator moving between floors. A moment later, we ease back down again, and when I lift my head, I can see the wave racing past. Oh. I wish there was a way to warn the people on shore that a tidal wave was heading in their direction. I can only hope it won't be so bad by the time it gets there. For now, though, we have to worry about ourselves. A quick head check shows that only one person was washed overboard. Atam. But he was able to swim quickly back to the raft and climb on board. He shivers with cold and someone offers him a fur blanket. Everyone looks dazed and frightened. I know just how they feel. The tidal wave, even just the tiny crest of it that we got, seems to have carried us a bit closer to shore. As the day wears on, I don't have to worry that we're paddling in the right direction. The purple peaks of the mountains, once so distant, are now in sight. They're still a far ways off, but now we know that we're heading somewhere, and that it's not in my head, which is a relief. My ears continue ringing for a few hours, and I can start to hear the voices of the others again toward sunset. We're careful with our water and our food, rationing it just in case we run into trouble. Cathar paddles endlessly, as if he never grows tired, and I'm impressed with his stamina. I curl up next to him while the baby sleeps, and he keeps one hand on us, holding both of us protectively close. I feel tired and dirty and gritty from sea salt, and it's no longer temperate in the slightest. The air is bitterly cold, and I watch my breath puff up in clouds. The others have taken to wearing the layers of furs that they laughed at me for insisting on, and I can see the shocked surprise in Jashel's face as he blows on his hands to warm them. I can't blame him for not believing me when I said how cold it was. The island is so warm and sultry. Was, I remind myself, was so warm and sultry. It's gone now, and nothing remains of it except the ringing in my ears, the choking black curtain at the far end of the sky that acts as a tombstone of sorts, and the ash that started to fall from overhead. At first I thought it was snow, but a taste of it on my lips made me spit. Definitely ash. All of this worries me, and I try to keep Zaren's mouth covered as he sleeps, even though he fights me on it. We can't help breathing some of the ash, but it's dangerous to suck in large mouthfuls of it. Of course, everything's dangerous right now. I look longingly at the shore, still no closer than it was a few hours ago, despite all the paddling. To my side, Cathar shifts, and then I see his knives come out. He rests them on his legs, scanning the waters. A prickle goes up my spine, and I sit upright. What is it? I touch his arm in case his hearing is still wiped. Cathar? He points to the center of the raft, indicating I should move there. I edge toward it, and he hands me Kiki. I've got my arms full of bird and baby, and I'm about to protest when he goes utterly still next to me. What? I ask again, worried. Is it the mountain? Is something else? When he gazes back down at the water, ever watchful, the hackles on my skin go up. Is it something in the water? I look back to the other rafts, the aliens sprawled out atop them. Arjal has his spear in hand, and Ojek watches the water as well. I peer over the side as much as I dare, but I don't see anything. A long, tense moment ticks past. I watch Cathar for clues and relax when his shoulders ease from their tight position. Whatever it was, it's gone. A silver coil reaches up and snags Cathar's arm, fast as lightning, and drags him over the side of the raft. He's gone before I can even scream. My heart stops beating. I can't hear anything but the sound of lapping water hitting the edges of the raft.
Cathar!
Arjal calls, moving protectively to the front of his raft. Mari cries out as the entire thing bobs back and forth, and I can feel their raft jerking on the cord that holds ours to them. None of that matters. My Cathar, my mate, is gone. There's not even a hint of him above the water, not a ripple. I take a breath, and it feels like my heart is being torn out of my chest. No, no, this isn't real. This isn't happening. I set Zaren down in the center of the raft, and the bird with him, scrambling to the side. I'm going in after him, maybe.
No, Loren,
Jashel says, grabbing my ankle. I want to scream in his face, but then he flings himself overboard, knife in his teeth, and disappears under the water as well. He wasn't pulled in. He went in after my guy. Zaren starts wailing, and I pick him up, cradling him close. Oh, God, what can I do? The urge to go after him battles inside me, but Nadek and Zaren can't be left on this raft alone. But if he dies... I don't want to live if he dies. A sob breaks from my throat, and Zaren cries even harder. Kiki screams his own protest in my ear, and it seems like the entire world is wailing with me. The water is so still, so very still, that I can't stand it. Please, I tell the world around me, please don't take him.
Cathar!
Arjal bellows, squatting at the edge of his raft, spear in hand.
Jashel! Cathar! Look,
Nadek says, and I realize dimly that he's at my side, two knives in his hands. He babbles something else I don't understand and then points at the water. I see nothing, and then a head bursts through the surface. Cathar flings his hair back off his face, and I realize he's camouflaged to the same murky green as the ocean. Jashel surfaces a moment later, scratches, clawed over his bloody face, and they both start swimming toward the raft. I start laughing, or crying, probably crying. They feel like the same right now. Cathar climbs onto the raft, wobbling the entire thing. I don't care. I give him my arm and help him climb on board, not caring that he's icy wet and his entire body shudders. All I can see is that as his camo slowly turns back to his normal color, He's covered in scratches and circular bruises that look like they came from tentacle suckers. Jashel is similarly beat up, with a colorful lash around his throat that speaks of the fight that happened under the water, too deep for even a splash to make it to the surface. Did so many minutes pass then? Or was the fight quick and brutal? It doesn't matter. All that matters is my Cathar is back. I grab him and hold him close, still sobbing with relief. I'm all emotional, it seems. Gone is the low-will-take-charge mentality. I almost lost him in the blink of an eye. All it took was a moment, and then there wouldn't be a Cathar in this world any longer. My calm is gone, and I just cry and cry and cry while he rocks me against his wet chest and tries to soothe my tears.
Lo,
he murmurs after a time, stroking my cheek.
Is good. All good.
I know, I blubber, and then I just start crying even more when Nadek takes the crying baby from my arms and shoves a blanket into Cathar's hands. I realize he's freezing, ice in his wet hair, and I haven't been taking care of him. I should have handled that. Cathar hands the blanket over to Jashel with a quiet word. Oh, Jashel, he saved my mate. I move to the other man's side and make him bend down so I can kiss his cheek, weeping. You are the best guy ever, I swear.
Lo, Cathar.
My mate growls, pulling me back to his side. Jashel just gives me a bewildered look. I don't even mind that my guy is possessive. When he pulls a blanket around his shoulders and then pulls me underneath it, I plaster myself against him gladly, and I cry a little more, because I'm going to have this tiny mental breakdown, damn it, and then I'll be calm. Tomorrow, I'll be back to myself. Today, I'm going to be a little bit of a mess. And that's okay. 21. Lauren. The warriors are on high alert for the rest of the afternoon, now that we know that the things in the water are aware of us and that they're hungry. I see spears and knives out instead of paddles. Cathar and the others insist that Zaren and I move to the center of the raft at all times, and I know they're being protective. I want to help out, but it's not worth the argument, so I move to the middle, and Cathar's tail stays wrapped around my ankle at all times, as if he's unwilling to let me go. I don't mind that in the slightest. I never want him out of my sight again. I don't care if that's clingy. I'll happily cling to that alien's leg for the rest of my life as long as it means we're together, always. I'm crazy with love for him, and I tell him over and over again every time he touches me. I don't know that he understands the word love, but it doesn't matter. My touches tell him everything. It's near sunset on day two when I see a tiny plume of smoke drifting against the pinkish golden sky. The mountains have loomed steadily closer, and that smoke on the horizon excites me. It's not enough smoke to be another volcano. It's tiny and thin, but I think it's just the right size for an encampment's fire. They're still there at the beach. Thank God. I point it out, and we start to paddle in that direction. It's against the current, but with four strong arms to each man on the raft, we're able to push ahead until we plow close enough to shore that the waves start to carry us forward. I can see the fire on the cliffs against the twilight, and I feel a bit of excitement and worry in the pit of my stomach. Do the others, Harlow and her mate, Liz and hers, Vectol and Rokan, and all the other blue aliens, think Marisol and I are dead? No one ever came after us, but they sank the only ship. Granted, it was a spaceship, but rafting over from the island, and Cathar's near death, tells me that the water's too dangerous for a lot of crossings back and forth. Even now I look at the dark waters around us with terror and dread. I can't wait to be off of this raft and back on shore. I wonder, far too late, of course, if more mouths to feed will be welcome. I never stopped to think about if there was enough food for all, Surely there will be. And I wonder what's happened in the month that we've been gone. Has anyone else resonated? Have they built shelters? Has Willa been found? Or is she dead? I don't like to think about that. I brush ash off of my arms as I lean forward on the raft. It's not like that will help things move along, but I feel the need to lean just the same. I'm eager to get back to the others, to bring Cathar and his people to shore, to get their bellies full of hot food and show them that, yes, there are other people left, and they're good guys, and we can all live happily together on the beach. I hope. God, I hope. I've seen how the three different groups get along, and they bicker and fight. But the three rafts strung together tell me that they're willing to work together for a common cause. I hope that my blue guys will feel the same about Harlow and Liz's blue guys. I'm so nervous. Like it or not, though, there's no going back. There's no island to go back to. The ash falling on my arms and in my hair is proof of that. If they don't want us with them, we'll just go elsewhere. We can figure out how to catch food on our own, and I remember a little how to build a fire. We'll manage, one step at a time. That's all it takes. But then our rafts are sliding toward shore, carried in by the rolling tide. No one at the distant campfire has noticed us yet, as we're pretty far down the rocky beach. It's bitterly cold, though, and Zaren makes fussy noises of distress until I wrap him tighter against my chest, snuggled under the layers of fur I wear. Ignoring the cold, Arjal and Cathar get out and wade to shore, then guide the raft chain in, tugging us forward. One by one we step onto land, and my legs wobble with relief as I step onto the crunching sand. Thank you, sand. Thank you, mountains. Thank you, distant fire. Thank you for being here, because I'm mighty tired of ocean. It takes a few minutes for everyone to pile onto the beach. Some of the others think to grab supplies, and Matok and Sabren help carry T'Chai forward, Marisol at his side. Everyone huddles in the cold, waiting. Then Atam clears his throat.
Is cold,
he points out, his toothy grin bright in the darkness.
Fire.
They all watch me, waiting. Oh, of course, I feel silly for making them wait. I've been the one demanding and fussing and pushing this entire time. I need to see things through until the end and not just hand over the reins on the beach. I gesture at the fire. I'm going to go say hello and remind them that Mari and I are alive. Are you coming, Mari? She hesitates, then clasps her mate's hand.
I want to stay with T'Chai.
Her voice is wobbly, as if she's fighting back tears.
Just in case?
Just in case. Is he that bad she worries he'll die at any moment? My heart aches for her and I nod. All right, I'll go alone. I gesture to the others and hand Zaren over to Cathar. Wait here. My big alien scowls at me and hands the baby to Nadek. Kiki perches on Cathar's shoulder and he tries to shoo him off, but the thing only flaps its wings, irritated, and stays.
Cathar, go,
my mate tells me.
Cathar, lo.
I can guess what that means. We're a team, and we do this together. Even though I'm a little worried at how they'll take the sight of a new guy, especially one that changes colors and has four arms, I'm glad that he's going to be at my side. It seems right. I extend my hand to him. Lo, Cathar, I agree. He's mine, and I'm his. Cathar speaks quietly to the others, and I see Odran and Arek drop their packs on shore, getting comfortable for the wait. I hope it won't be long, but I don't know how the others are going to react. I shouldn't be worried. They accepted all of us humans with open arms. But a lot has happened in the last month on my end, and I can't even presume to think of what's happened on this beach while we've been gone. But then, my mate gives Kiki to Jashel and turns to me. He takes my hand and pulls me under his furs, keeping me warm, and then we're walking down the beach toward the fire and toward our new home. It's a short walk, maybe 5 or 10 minutes, and the only thing I can hear for the longest time is the hum of his cooey in his chest and the crash of the waves against the shore. As we move forward, though, I can hear singing coming from the campfire ahead. Really, really bad singing. I swear, you guys really are the worst, Liz says, her voice rising above the others. You couldn't hold a tune in a bucket, Zolea. A ripple of laughter meets her insult, and the one called Zolea starts singing louder, and she's right. He's terrible. There's more laughter and then a gasp. Several people jump to their feet, staring into the shadows, staring at us. I swallow hard and then step forward, pushing Cathar behind me. Hi, honey. We're home.
22. Cathar. The urge to camouflage in front of all of these strangers is overwhelming. I grew up surrounded by more people than this, but they were not unknown to me. They did not stare at me with wide, startled eyes, or look at me as if assessing whether or not I was a danger. But if I camouflage here, it is not a simple tearing away of a leaf loincloth and blending into the trees. There are no trees here, and if I fling aside the heavy leathers on my body, I am in great danger of freezing my tail off. But my mate gives a happy cry as another female, heavy with kit, moves forward to hug her, and then another, and then they are all making excited noises and crying, and I think this must be good. One of the males comes forward, eyeing me, and says something to my mate. She moves to my side, happiness in her eyes even as she weeps, and puts a hand to my chest.
This is Cathar. He's my mate.
The big male's eyes narrow. He asks something in the strange human tongue, and Loren shakes her head, looking unhappy at the question. She mentions Mercil and gestures down at the beach and indicates that there are more of us waiting. The male nods and turns to one of the others standing at his side, a big, ugly creature with two arms and twisted horns. Go with them when they bring the others. I pause, startled. His accent was strange, and the way he spoke our words odd, but I understood him. I step forward. You speak the tongue of the Sach. The male looks over at me in surprise. I am Vektal, he says, moving to clasp my arm as he studies my face. And I was not sure if you were one of us until just now. I clasp his arm in greeting as well, and realize that I am camouflaging. Ah, I let my skin return to its normal shade, and realize that even in the dark, I can tell that he is a much deeper blue than I am. There are other differences as well. His brow and his skin has thick, ridged plates. He does not have forearms, but we are of a similar height, though I am much broader, much bigger with muscle. His horns are as large as our jaws, and I wonder if this is what the ancestors looked like before they met with the others, and became four clans instead of one. There is much to learn here, I realize. My clan waits on the beach, I tell him. Our home is destroyed. He gives me a curious look.
Where was your home? We knew Loren and Marisol were missing, but our trackers could not find them. We were waiting for them to return to the beach, but we never thought that they would bring others.
The one called Vektal speaks their name strangely, even more strangely than how my mate says her words. I notice she watches us speak, her brow furrowed. She cannot understand our words, and I feel another bubble of frustration, even as there is relief that I can speak with the others here. Still, we cannot share our thoughts as I wish. Soon, I resolve. Once all are safe, we will learn each other's language. For now, there are more urgent matters. We lived in the green jungle, across the water. Another nearby looks amused. His horns are curving and proud, but I notice there is a small broken kink in the tail that whisks back and forth as he crosses his arms over his chest.
An island, Josie still speaks of it. She swears there was one across the waters.
I nod. It has been destroyed with the second death of the Great Smoking Mountain. Even now it rains its tears down on us. I wipe a smear of ash off my arms. Vektal grunts agreement.
You are welcome here as long as you pose no danger to us or our females.
Never. I look at my Loren. I would never harm a female. She smiles at me.
He's a good guy,
she tells Vektal. He asks her something.
Oh,
Loren says.
Fire's accident, wasn't you? Was Marisol just a mistake, that's all.
Vektal looks relieved.
That was me, he says in her odd language. That I missed something.
Nope, it's all good.
She beams at him and looks over at me.
Turned out great.
My Loren must speak pleasantly of me, judging from the way the others are staring. It makes me feel possessive, and I reach out for her. She presses her cheek into my hand, nuzzling it. Vektal looks surprised when I reach for my mate, and I realize why. My leathers have fallen back and revealed that I have four arms, not two puny ones like him. I can hear a startled murmur around the fire.
I see there is much for our tribes to discuss, Vektal says to me. More than just how you kept the humans hidden for so long.
His gaze falls to my arms.
Many, many things to discuss.
It seems so.
Loren. It feels like the beach is ridiculously crowded, as people surge forward making room for the newcomers near the fire. There's a ton of chatter around me and it feels overwhelming. I'm hugged and patted on the back, given fresh furs and food and a place by the fire. Zaren's in my arms and he's cooed at and offered treats, and several women put their arms out to hold him. After days on the raft in relative quiet, it feels overwhelming. I just want to be in bed with my Cathar, but I know it'll be a while before everyone calms down enough for sleeping arrangements. Over the din of the crowd, I can hear Marisol's sobbing. He's sick, I hear her say, and I know she's talking about T'Chai. The others of his tribe are clustered around him, reluctant to leave his side, even though I catch Matok giving curious glances at the women near the fire.
It will all be well, a soothing voice says, and then I see Farley put an arm around Mari's shoulders. Let us bring him to Varonka. She will be able to help.
She will? Mari sniffs, surprised. How?
I have to echo that sentiment. My memories of Veronica were of a plain brown-haired woman with clumsy feet and not much else to call attention to her. Oh, and the golden-skinned guy she resonated to.
Voronka is a healer,
Farley says with authority.
We will bring your mate to her, and she will make him better.
A healer? I'm surprised. Veronica seemed so bland. Wow, I murmur, watching as the group of Arjal's men carry T'Chai to one of the distant tents. I know, it's pretty impressive, Hannah says, moving to stand next to me. I've seen what she can do. A funny look crosses her face and she turns away almost as quickly as she arrived. I need to check on something. As she races away, I see Jashel get to his feet on the other side of the fire. He has a hand over his heart, a shocked look on his face. Oh boy, I recognize that expression. A moment later, a smile creases his mouth, and then he races after her. There's an intent gleam in his eyes, and he heads after Hannah. Uh-oh, Nadine says, moving to the spot Hannah vacated. Samantha is on the other side of her, and they both share a knowing grin. Looks like someone got hit with the resonance stick. You think?
I glance at my mate and he's watching Jachelle retreat, a pleased look on his face.
Oh, yeah, Samantha agrees. Look at Kashal racing after him. Every time someone resonates, they get a chaperone to make sure no one's pressuring us into having sex before we're ready. Poor Ashtar was going to murder Zoleia for shadowing them all the time. And the twins are fascinated with Angie, so someone's always at her side.
Wow, I feel like I've missed a lot. My head is spinning. Yeah, but I feel the same way about you, Nadine says. She makes grabby hands at Zoren. Give me the baby. I hand him over, tired. He weighs more by the minute, it seems.
Look how cute he is,
Nadine squeals, laughing when he camouflages to match her darker skin. And four chubby little baby fists. Oh my goodness, I could eat you with a spoon.
Better carve one first,
Samantha says and gives the baby an affectionate chuck under his chin. I hear Kiki make an indignant sound as Jachelle disappears, and Sam gasps.
What the fuck was that?
Pet bird, I say, putting my arm out as I see Kiki doing his wobbling flight overhead. He's scared but clearly wants to land. I know from my time with the others that Kiki has a bad wing and can't fly far, which is why he's such a clingy pet. He immediately lands on my arm, crawls up my sleeve to my shoulder, and then buries his face in my hair. Poor thing. I pet his ugly little face. I know just how he feels. I want Cathar too, but he's still talking in hushed voices with Vekdal, the chief, and they're both watching the others, probably waiting to see if anyone else resonates.
Are you sure that's a bird?
Sam asks, wrinkling her nose. Or a bat, whatever you want to call him. I rub Kiki's nose. He's hungry, though. We all are. Come, sit, Harlow tells me, a note of steel in her sweet voice. Hands push me forward, and then I'm at the center of the group, clustered near the fire, and even farther from my mate. I give him a helpless look as he talks to the chief. He starts to push to my side, through the crowd, and people gasp as he moves to stand behind me, his hands on my shoulders, staking his claim. I might be a little proud of that small movement. Just a little. I like being claimed by him. I put my hand over one of his, and Kiki pecks at my fingers. Harlow appears at my side with a bowl of cooked meat and nuts, and I give Kiki a chunk before offering some to my mate. The little creature's an omnivore, and eats anything put in front of him. My Cathar pushes the bowl back into my hands.
Eat,
he says gruffly. You were the one paddling, I protest, trying to give it back to him. I can wait. He growls low in his throat, and I roll my eyes.
You guys realize there's enough food for everyone, right?
Liz appears with a second bowl, and then everyone is sitting down and getting comfortable by the fire with food in their hands. I don't eat until Cathar is handed a bowl, and then I nibble on my food, making sure that my mate is eating enough. I know it's his habit to give food to myself and the baby instead of eating on his own, but as I watch him wolf his food, I'm relieved. He needs his strength as much as I do. I absorb gossip as people talk around us, and it seems that everyone can speak the alien's language but me. I try not to feel left out at this realization. But when Erevin says something and my mate laughs, I want to know what it was. I pick at my food, unsure how to feel.
So, did you hear about Willa?
Nadine asks, feeding a bit of broth to Zoren. No, I breathe. Is she okay? Did they find her?
Oh, yeah,
Nadine says, a wry expression on her face. She and Gren resonated. That pairing's a bit of a mess because he won't come back to camp. It's all fucked up.
It sounds like it. Poor Willa. To think that my sweet friend is tied to that monster.
I wouldn't feel too bad for her, Nadine says, and Sam snickers at her side. They make a lot of noise up the hill, if you know what I'm saying. I can feel myself blushing. I can only imagine.
I see. Since we're getting to the real meat of things here, I want to know about the four hands.
Sam begins before Nadine bursts into giggles.
Yes, I wish to know about the four hands as well,
Vectol says, stepping toward the fire. The two at my side giggle even more crazily, and I can hear Liz snickering nearby. My face feels like it's going to catch on fire. I'm blushing so damn hard. Is all I say.
My ancestors did not have four arms,
Vectol continues with a glance at my mate.
I wish to know how it happened.
Oh. Now I feel like blushing even more because I was trying to think of a tactful way to tell Vectol that it was none of his damn business how Cathar puts his hands on me. Of course, he's asking something innocent. It's just my mind that goes to filthy places. Filthy, filthy mind.
I don't know. We can't really talk to each other. I've learned some of his words, but not enough.
I can't quite keep the jealousy out of my voice, either. How unfair it is that Vectol can chit-chat with my man 5 minutes after meeting him, and I've been with Cathar a month, and I still can't ask him basic stuff about himself. Vectol frowns.
You did not receive the language from Mardok before you left, did you?
Nope. There were plans to get it somehow, but now the ship is at the bottom of the ocean. Stuff just happened too quickly, and there was no time.
Come, Vectol says. He can fix that for you.
He looks at my mate and says something, and then Cathar takes the squawking kaki off my shoulder, handing him over to Nadek, who is seated nearby and shoveling food into his mouth as fast as he can.
He can fix that. Right now? Really?
I ask, jumping to my feet. When Cathar touches my arm, I automatically grab his hand in mine and drag him behind me.
Yes,
Vectol says, and gestures at the cluster of tents in the distance where the encampment is set up. I follow eagerly, not caring that it's cold beyond the warmth of the fire. Who cares about a bit of cold when I will soon have the ability to talk to Cathar? Really, really talk to him. I'm so excited I'm practically dancing as we stride up the hill from the beach. Vectol chats with Cathar as we head up the hill, and then gestures at one of the tents. In the distance, I can see a hint of candlelight and several people standing in the doorway of another tent, while Veronica presses her hands onto Chai's abdomen, an intent look on her face. We head past their tent and into one of the nearer ones, where Farley's slinky-looking furry pony thing paws at the snow and nibbles on something underneath. Vectol scratches at the door flap, then waits. Someone clears their throat and then speaks, and Vectol pulls the flap back. It's dark inside, but a moment later a flame is sparked, and I watch as Farley lights a candle. Her hair is disheveled, and her mouth puffy, and Mardok adjusts the front of his leggings and turns his back to us as he moves toward one of the baskets in the back of the tent.
Language chips, right?
He says in English.
I can do that.
Farley just looks busily at the fire, poking it with a stick.
Did we interrupt? I ask, feeling a little embarrassed.
I squeeze Cathar's hand. I guess it won't be the end of the world if we have to wait until morning to talk.
If we waited for these two to pull themselves apart, we would be waiting a very long time,
Vectol says, voice amused. Farley just chuckles and gestures at the furs near the fire pit.
Come, have a seat.
This will not take long,
Mardok adds, pulling out something wrapped in leather.
Can you pull your hair back from your ear for me?
I do, a little worried. Vectol speaks in a low voice to Cathar, who grips my shoulder tightly, as if he doesn't entirely trust what's going on. He growls low in his throat when Mardok steps forward, and the two exchange a few quick words. I squeeze Cathar's hand to let him know I'm fine, that I'm not worried about being hurt. Truth be told, I don't care how painful it is. If it means I can talk to my mate, I'm all for a headache or whatever this will bring. I get a little nervous when Mardok pulls out a long, frightening-looking needle, taps in something, and then moves it toward my ear. I squeeze my eyes shut as he instructs Farley to bring a candle and hold it close.
Be very still,
Mardok tells me. It's the only warning I get before there's a hot pinch behind my ear and then a burning, piercing pain shooting into my skull. I can't stop the swift intake of breath and the tight clench I have on Cathar's hand.
Are you hurting her?
I hear my mate ask clear as day. The language isn't mine, but I understand it, just as easily as I understand English. It's amazing. And I start to cry all over again, because I'm just so emotional. Cathar kneels beside me, shoving Mardok away. He cups my face in his hands and gazes at me with worried eyes.
Lo,
he whispers, caressing my cheek with his thumb. Hi there, I whisper back to him, and then, because I've wanted to say it for so long, I love you. My alien breaks into a massive grin.
23. Cathar. I do not know how the one called Mardok made my mate speak my language. Perhaps it is a magic that they can teach us. I do not care. All I know is that my Loren is beaming up at me with bright, happy eyes, even as she weeps.
This is so wonderful, she says between sniffles. I've been wanting to talk to you for so long, Cathar. You have no idea.
Yes, I do, I tell her gently. I have wanted the same thing.
Oh, right.
She gives a teary giggle and then flings herself into my embrace, wrapping her small arms around my neck. I see it was a success, Mardok says in a pleased voice, putting his magic speaking tool away. We will get Marisol in the morning. I don't think she will leave her mate's side right now. You have my thanks, I tell them. You all do. I am overwhelmed with this evening. So much has happened in the short while since we arrived that my head feels as if it spins atop my neck. I did not imagine that the others here would be Sak, or that they would be able to heal T'Chai, or that they would make my mate speak my words, or that Jashel would resonate as soon as we arrived, and Nadek and Zoran are safe with good food in their bellies, and it is too much. My knees grow weak and I stagger, one knee going to the ground. Sit, Vektal says with a firm hand on my arm. You and your people have been through much today.
I will get more food,
the Sak female says, her voice pleasant. She gets to her feet in a fluid motion and escapes the tent, back into the cold. I am surprised that the people here, Sak people, for all that I cannot tell what clan they should be, wear very little clothing. The humans dress in many layers as we do. It is bitterly cold, like my mate said it would be, but it does not seem to bother these people. Well, most of these people. Vektal wears leather boots and a loincloth, but the one called Mardok wears nearly as many layers as I do.
Sit, baby,
Lo tells me, mixing some of her words with mine. She brushes my hair back from my face.
We can relax now, I promise. We're safe.
I nod and sit wearily on the ground. It is as if all of my strength has left me. We are here. We are safe. We can rest. I pull my Lo into my arms, settling her in my lap. I refuse to let her get an arm's length away from me. Not just yet. She does not seem to mind, though. She slides her arms around my waist and leans her cheek against my shoulder, and I wrap myself around her. Most stories will have to wait until morning, Vektal says. But before I go, I wish to know about your people. Are there more on the island? I shake my head. All gone. We are the only clans that are left. My people are the clan of the Strong Arm. Our Jarls are the clan of the Tall Horn. And Ojek's clan is that of Shadowed Cat. We are the only ones to survive the death of the Great Smoking Mountain.
The first death.